What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
The Volume.
The Draymond Green Show is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There's no better place to bet the action than on FanDuel Sportsbook during the football season. It's easy to use. It's safe and secure. You get payouts in as fast as 2 hours. There's so many bet types. My favorite, same game parlay bets. There's live betting, player props, futures. If you're new, just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. To get started now, sign up. Please use the promo code COLIN. COLIN. FanDuel Sportsbook makes it easy.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Draymond Green Show. Excited to be back. I told you all guests would be back, and we opening it back up with a bang. We got the Underground King, the sixth man himself, Lou Will, joining the show today. Been around for a long time, 17 years in this thing. That equals a lot of stories. So we're going to get into them. But before we do, just want to catch you up on a little bit of stuff that I've had going on, which is number one, and most importantly, the Drew League. So I had never been to the Drew League before, which is obviously I've never played, but I had never been at all. And King James himself was playing. My brother Debo was playing. So I'm like, you know what? I'm about to pop out. I'm going to go check out the Drew and see what's happening. When I tell you it was the most incredible environment I've been in a long time, excluding the NBA Finals, was the most incredible environment. I mean, the energy in there was insane. The roof was leaking. And no, it was not leaking because the roof actually had a leak. It was leaking because there were probably way too many people in there. It was hot, air conditioning on to try to keep it cool. Then you got the heat mixing with that, and you're just getting like these drips down from the roof, and they kept having to like wipe the floor. That's the little stuff. But let's talk about like Bron going to play in the Drew League. Like, that's monumental. Like, LeBron James does not have to go play in the Drew League. That's insane. He's in year 20, by the way, still going to play in the Drew League. I thought that was absolutely incredible. And, you know, to watch the intensity level, like, you have to understand the dynamic in things like that happening, okay? So it's LeBron James, which everyone wants their opportunity to say, I did X to LeBron James. I scored on LeBron. I got a stop. I stripped him. I blocked his shot. And most importantly, I beat him. The game was actually pretty close. It was really close. The opposing team was up majority of the game. And you know, people start texting me like, yo, I didn't realize when I was at the game that the game was playing on the NBA app, which also shows you the power of LeBron James. But people start texting me like, yo, are they going to win this game? I'm like, absolutely. Why do you think they're going to win this game? Because LeBron James and DeMar DeRozan is on that team. And at any moment, they're going to shut these guys' water off. Like, yeah, they hitting shots right now. And like, you know, they getting to the cup and everything look good right now. But my big brother, Mateen Cleese, has a saying, a pro is a pro and a Joe is a Joe. And he always say that. And the reality is like, yeah, them guys are good. They good basketball players. They're, you know, some of the guys play overseas. You know, guys were high-level college players. But a pro is a pro and a Joe is a Joe. And I knew, due to that, that at some point they're going to shut their water off and they're not going to be able to score. And at some point, they're not going to be able to stop them from scoring. And just as I thought, I mean, it may have been 10 straight possessions where the opposing team didn't score. I think they were called BPE or something like that. It may have been 10 straight possessions that they didn't score a bucket. They had the tall white kid, he was playing well the whole game. Would not miss a free throw. Got down the stretch, couldn't buy a bucket. And I don't just mean any bucket. He kept missing free throws down the stretch. Like the last 6 minutes of the game, once that pressure turned up, all of a sudden he couldn't make a free throw anymore. And I knew that that's what would happen. But less about the actual game itself, because at the end of the day, LeBron and DeMar, and they had the kid Boogie, who went to USC, I think, than Memphis or whatever it was. They're going to win. Like, they're supposed to be better than them. Like, all right, so I get that. So let's stop discussing the actual game. But the atmosphere, you got LeBron James, who's leading the Los Angeles Lakers. And he's just LeBron James, doesn't need anything else to be said. But leading the Los Angeles Lakers, going to the Drew League in Los Angeles and playing in that league, just allowing the people to touch him. Like, that's a big deal. Like, you think of those kids that were watching that, like, it's insane. You know, and then, you know, you get on Twitter and, like, someone wants to discuss the game. Like, and I told y'all know who I'm talking about, but I'm done mentioning fools' names. But, you know, you want to get on Twitter and, like, talk about the game and, like, a shooting percentage. Like, no, let's talk about what LeBron James' appearance at the Drew League did for these young African-American kids that were there. And by the way, it's not just African-American kids. There were kids of all races there. But when I speak of African-American kids, because for us, growing up in the neighborhood, like, you think LeBron James is a surreal thing, because there's no way for you to touch LeBron James. Like, you just see him on a basketball court. You see him on your TV screen, on an Instagram picture, video, whatever. There's no way for you to touch LeBron James. Like, there were so many kids there that could say, wow, I got that close to LeBron James. Like, I was able to watch LeBron James and DeMar DeRozan play basketball. There were kids there that would never have an opportunity to attend an NBA game. And yet you got idiots talking about a shooting percentage. Like, let's talk about what that did for the people that was in that gym and the magnitude of that moment. Let's talk about that instead of, again, trying to always derail the black man. Some point it's got to stop. And so we're not going to discuss how incredible it is for a guy in his 20th season, going into his 20th season, arguably the greatest player of all time, going to play basketball at the Drew League in front of people. And by the way, for free. Now, the Drew League can cost $10. It could cost $20 to get in. I'm not sure if it costs that or if it's free. But he's playing for free. He's not going to the Smileys and saying, I need a percentage of the door because I'm playing in the league. So he's doing that for free. He's doing that because he wants to do that. But we're not going to talk about that in the magnitude that it had. We're going to try to find something about the game to try to lessen this man's impact. At some point, it's got to stop. At some point, you can't be willing to listen to that because it's disgusting. And it is that very thing that's ruining our world. It's just in basketball terms right here. But it's that attitude, it's that mindset that continues to derail the world we live in. So I am here to say, as someone who attended the game and didn't find the nearest stat sheet, which, by the way, that's how these people do when they're analyzing our games. They find the nearest stat sheet they can find, look at the stat sheet and say, oh, look at that. Oh, such, 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 such did this. Can't evaluate a game of basketball to save their lives. But what they can do is look at a stat sheet and get it all wrong. Look at a stat sheet and miss the entire point. At some point, you're not going to be able to build your career and continue to try to stay relevant off derailing the black man. It's just not going to work. So I want to put this out there. For those of you that didn't attend, that couldn't attend, it was one of the most incredible basketball games that I've ever been to. And it was less about the actual game being played. Because I've been to some incredible basketball games. In fact, I've been a part of some incredible basketball games. But the magnet, like if you were in there, you just felt it. It was different. It was big. I mean, after halftime, they spent 5 minutes telling people back up off the baseline. So we're not starting the game. And then they realize, well, where are those people backing up to? So unless you're going to clear this whole thing out, they have nowhere to back. And they just started the game. And like the impact that it had and like, you just knew when you walked in, like that environment was different. So kudos to Bron for going out there and letting the people touch you. I thought that was absolutely incredible. And I hope everybody there and those that weren't there can appreciate what happened because it was absolutely amazing. DeAndre Ayton signs his extension. Finally, feel like we've been waiting on that for a while, a year, it seems. And, you know, he signed an offer sheet with the Indiana Pacers. For those of you that don't understand what just happened with DeAndre Ayton, let me explain to you. So DeAndre Ayton was a restricted free agent. You have restricted free agents and you have unrestricted free agents. For a first round pick in the NBA draft, you get 2 guaranteed years. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to be on the roster spot for 2 years. That means you get 2 guaranteed years of salary as if you're on the roster spot. You then have 2 team options. And what that is by a certain date, that team has to say, okay, we're picking up the option, and then that gives you 1 more year on the contract. So for first round picks, you get 2 guaranteed years, and then you have 2 player options. After that 4th year, you are a restricted free agent. What that means is you can go out and if you don't get an extension done with your team, you can then, and you're now restricted free agent, you can then go out and you can get an offer sheet from any other team in the NBA. Now, what that means is that team says, okay, we're offering DeAndre Ayton 4 years, $133 million. DeAndre Ayton then goes and signs that offer sheet. Once he's done signing that offer sheet, and it submitted to the NBA, the Phoenix Suns now have 48 hours to match that offer sheet or else DeAndre Ayton walks for nothing to the Indiana Pacers. Why that sucks is, and why you don't see it happen often is, DeAndre Ayton was the number one draft pick. For a team to draft him with the number one pick and then to let him walk for nothing, it's hard to recover from that. Because when are you going to get the number one pick again? Now you got to try to get free agents. And so it's very hard to recover from that. So all along, I knew Phoenix is 100% bringing him back. whether he gets an offer sheet or whether he ends up not getting the offer sheet that he wants and just have to negotiate directly with Phoenix, Phoenix is definitely bringing him back, because you just can't let the number one pick walk for nothing after 4 years, unless, of course, they're just not good. And even then, you're trying to trade and see if you can at least get a second round pick for him. So DeAndre Ayton signed his offer sheet with the Indiana Pacers. And where I thought it got very interesting was, I think the Phoenix Suns may have matched that offer sheet in like 2-3 hours. Like, they didn't wait around. They didn't mess around. And I thought that was very big of James Jones and the Phoenix Suns to sign that right away. And here's why. DeAndre Ayton, who was the number one pick, who wasn't able to reach an extension, who then was not able to get the deal that he wanted from Phoenix, had to go out and restrict the free agency, get an offer sheet, and then take it back to Phoenix. He could feel a way. He could be upset. He could be pissed off. And that's never good for anyone if he's coming back to that situation, because now he feels a way about this person, that person, and then does it really work? What I thought Phoenix matching that right away did was show DeAndre Ayton how important he was to them. Like, all right, you got your offer sheet. We're not about to mess around. We're not waiting 2 more days. Done. You got it. Match over. And I thought that said a lot to him, and I thought that was a great move by James Jones, who I have a bunch of respect for as a general manager. I think he's done an incredible job in building that thing that they have going in Phoenix. And I thought that was another splendid move by James Jones. So credit James Jones for how he handled that. Congratulations to DeAndre Ayton on getting his money. Like I've said before, I'll say it again, I always want to see guys get their money. And so it's absolutely incredible for him. You're talking generational wealth, kid from the Bahamas. You know, we all, as Americans, we see the Bahamas and we're like, oh man, it's incredible. Like, we go there for vacation. But I got a younger brother from the Bahamas, Tum Tum, and it ain't all peaches and cream. You know, they grow up rough in some parts of the Bahamas. And so you're talking a guy who's making money, and he has been since the beginning, by the way, as the number one pick, but who is making generational money and can continue to change his life, change his immediate family life, and also change family's lives back in the Bahamas. So absolutely incredible for DeAndre Ayton. I take my hat off to him. Job well done. Congratulations. Lastly, before we get into the interview with the great Lou Will, the Jazz are now saying that they are open to trading Donovan Mitchell. Kind of boring news, because you still want to see the trade go down before you get all excited about it, but exciting news because Donovan Mitchell is a young stud in this league and possibly on the move now. That can shake up some things, because you think of the team that he may get added to, that can get somebody over the hump, adding a Donovan Mitchell. So, now, obviously, it depends on what team he goes to. You can also go to some teams that you can help get further under the hump, because they just stink already. Now, he'll obviously make them better because he's that good, but some of these teams' rosters just ain't that great. So that is exciting. We'll see what happens, if he'll actually get traded or not, where he'll get traded. But I'm telling you, trading a Donovan Mitchell, trading a Kevin Durant, that's not something you wake up tomorrow and you're like, boop, that's done. Those things take a while when you're trading that level of talent, because you want to hear everything. You want to make sure you get the absolute most you can get for a level of talent like those guys. And so we'll see what happens with that. Keep your eyes open for it. But I definitely think it's interesting that they went from, we're not trading anybody, to trading Rudy Gobert, to, all right, we're staying put and we're going to build around Donovan, to now being open to trade in Donovan. I thought that was a very interesting thing that has happened over the course of the last few days in the NBA. So definitely got to keep an eye out on that, see what happens. As like I said, that can tilt the NBA one way or another. So we'll see. Be very interesting. And I'm also very interested in seeing how long it goes and if it'll actually happen. We'll see. But with that said, definitely time to get into the interview. We are back with the interviews. It's been 2.5 months since you've heard someone else's voice on a Draymond Green show other than myself and a little bit of Jackson, you know, when Jackson hopped in and was talking about them Celtics. which we all enjoy now and enjoy. But let's get straight into it.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com, one place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees, all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. A much bigger range than most grills. It's got a full grate sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Utilize the smoke boost setting to intensify that smoky flavor. Direct flame cooking creates searing, crisping, and browning. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You'll cook on two levels at the same time, so you can make enough for everyone, then clean up quick with the pull and clean grease and ash management system at the front of the grill. Cook confidently with intuitive digital controls at the grill and enjoy the sleek, easy-to-use surface. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
Hey guys, this is Matt Jones, Drew Franklin from the Fade This podcast. We got a great episode coming up, picks in all the sports, football, basketball, we do them all, but here's a preview of this week's episode.
Do you think it's more embarrassing to dye your hair or to have hair plugs?
I don't think either are embarrassing if you're not trying to conceal it and act like you didn't.
Okay, so you think if you just come out and go, I got hair plugs.
Yeah, like check out these hair plugs. I mean, don't just walk around, hey, stranger, I don't want you thinking this is natural. You know, but I mean,
do you have to do that with everyone you meet?
Some people try to act like they, you know what I mean.
Yeah, but I mean, like John Cena got him. You know, when John Cena came back to wrestling, he had a bald spot, and now he doesn't. Mm-hmm. You think he should be required in all interviews to say, look, by the way, I covered up my bald spot?
Yeah, I guess it's weird. I mean, you don't wear a sign or like put a sign in your yard, but...
All right, so what about toupees?
Those are the most obvious.
Say you're like Bill Self and you can get it to where it looks good.
His is magical. I don't even know if his is a toupee.
It is.
I think he went into the future and had a procedure we haven't even discovered yet.
And this episode was brought to you in partnership with DraftKings. To hear more, listen and subscribe to Fade This on iHeartRadio or wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm honored to welcome, number one, just for starters, this is our first guest back on the Draymond Green Show since before the playoffs, which was April. And as you know, you can't come back with a guest that's just anyone. You got to come back with somebody that's accomplished, that got the respect amongst their peers and amongst the world, but also somebody who... you know, gonna garner the attention that people want to hear from. And I think most importantly, because the fit has to work, that I want to hear from and that I want to chop it up with. And like I said, it's an honor to welcome you to the show, the great Lou Will. What's up, my brother?
What's up, G? Congrats again, my man. Another one.
Thank you, bro. Another one, like Callis said.
Another one.
I appreciate it.
That was
dope.
It was exciting to watch, man. My daughter was glued to the television. She a big Draymond Green fan, my 11-year-old Jada. So shout out to Jada. I know she's going to watch this. She watched all your podcasts. So her face lit up when I told her I was doing this today, man. So congrats again.
Hey, Jada, I got nothing but love for you because I tell you what, I got booed at the Drew League the other day, Jada. Everywhere I go, I'm public enemy number one. So to know that I have that love behind
me. You got to take the love where it comes from. You got to take the love.
And the reality is the real love comes from the kids anyway. Like,
for sure.
You know, you get out in the world and people taint your image of this thing and that thing. The real love comes from the kids. So, Jada, I appreciate you.
She gonna love that.
does she hoop?
Yeah, she hoop. I'm trying to get her to learn how to work. We at that stage. Okay. You know, she 11. She love it. She passionate about it, but she ain't trying to get in that gym right now. You know what I'm saying? So I'm trying to get her to embrace the grind. And she got to just start getting around kids and just get her ass whooped a little bit. And then, you know, she's at that place where she hates losing more than she love winning. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to get her just to love winning, you know, just like, I'm just better than everybody. I want her to get that mindset. So that's what we're working on right now.
That's incredible. How long has she been into it?
She only been in the hoop like a year, 2 years. It came out the blue. I wasn't sure whether she was going to want to do it, but out the blue, she signed herself up for basketball. She said that's where all her friends was hanging out. So she just wanted to be in the gym with the homies. You know what I'm saying? And she caught that bug. She caught the bug. So I've been just trying to put her in the right positions. And you know how it is with parenting, man. Sometimes you got to ease off, especially when it's sports and everything. You got to ease off and kind of let them just enjoy it. Cause you know, we super competitive and we obviously want our kids to be the best at everything. And so we got that the information, part. We got the knowledge, we always trying to give it to them. And so I'm just picking my spots where I'm dad and I'm coach. You know what I'm saying? So
absolutely. So question, are you going to do the coaching thing as in coaching her, or are you just going to get her ready on the side and let someone else coach?
I want her to have the experience without me being a part of it. I want her to pave her way, have her own lane, be able to be comfortable around her friends, talk to her friends how they want to talk, engage how they want to engage, and just have their natural environment without your parents being around all the time. So I'm going to give her that space on that. But if it's something she requests for me to do and she want me to be around, I'll do it.
No, that's incredible. I always, you know, I got some homies that's kids are around that age now. And, you know, we always talk about, like, do you coach them or do you let somebody else coach them? And I always say, like, I don't want to be that dad that's coaching my kids. I want to be the dad that go and sit back and watch the game. And if I need to help somewhere, I will. Mm-hmm. And they all say, you're not going to be able to do that. There's no chance. Yeah. They say, because you're going to see someone coaching them, you're not going to agree with what it is that they're... Yeah, and then you're going to just go take it over.
Yeah.
And so we're going to tap back in a couple years.
Yeah, but it's important, like, you know, coming up in AAU, you're trying to get the furthest away from your parents that you can. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, you just want to hang with the homies. You want to hoop. You want to compete. And... only thing you want your parents for is for some snack money in between games and for them to be in the stands for their support. So that's where I'm at. Like, soon as I open my mouth up about basketball, she like rolling her eyes. I'm like, sweetheart, I'm the only expert, you know. Well, all right, I won't say nothing. You know what I'm saying? You know, I won't say nothing.
I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, she don't want to hear a word I got to say. But I respect it and I appreciate the space that she's trying to create. And so I take my time and I pick my spots with that.
No, that's super dope. As a former second round pick myself, you know, and just now, you know, getting into your career, you were the 45th pick coming out of high school, which we'll get into that a little later. But as a second round pick myself, I have a ton of respect for guys who come through the second round and get it out the mud and is able to make, you know, real careers out of that. What was your journey like going from highly touted high school senior, then you go into the draft and don't quite go in the draft where everyone expected you to go? What was that? What, number one, start me from the beginning. What was that draft night like and bypassing the first round knowing that you had just skipped college to reach your dream?
Yeah, I knew from the beginning. I knew two things from the beginning. I knew I was going to be a late second, a late first round pick, and I wasn't going to nobody college. So it really didn't matter where I was getting picked. I wasn't going to nobody school. I wasn't going to no class. That was out. I had started kind of experiencing some things in the lifestyle, and I just started looking around my class like, man, I'm nothing like y'all. And I don't think my journey is going to be nothing like y'all's. And so I began to train my brain for that. And so, you know, once I finally got around the draft night, my agent was kind of, he was like, you know, we think we're going to go to Miami at 27. And so, you know, I was kind of excited about the opportunity to do that. And then, you know, things changed. And it was a guy, Wayne Simeon, at the time. He was College Player of the Year. And he was still, he was still on the board at 27, and Miami took him. So at that point, I started spending. Well, first of all, I was invited to the draft, but my agent was like, I'm going to be honest with you. You're going to look crazy in there because we're going to be late first round. So I decided to stay at the crib. We threw a party at ESPN Zone. So I watched the draft at ESPN Zone. And I remember when that first round was over, I walked out of ESPN Zone and I stood in the lobby, and they still had the draft on and the TV in the lobby. And I watched the rest of it by myself because I didn't know which direction my career, what was going to happen at that point. You know, I hadn't worked out for any teams in the second round. Crazy enough, the Atlanta Hawks, they had the first pick of the second round.
Oh, wow.
And so we get on the phone, we call them. They like, we can't do it. You know, we're looking for a shooting guard, looking for a point guard, but we can't do it. We can't have two local kids on the bench at the same time. They had drafted Josh Smith the year before that.
Yeah,
and Kevin Willis was still getting those minutes, and Josh wasn't necessarily getting playing time. And so he was a big time guy in the city. And then so to have him and me, both of us on the bench, being local kids, being local superstar kids, it was a bad look. So they ended up drafting Salim Stoudemire with that pick. And so I didn't know what was what, you know what I'm saying? And that was my first wake up call to the business. Like, you know, trust words here and there, and don't trust the words until the actions match what they're saying. You know what I'm saying? And so I caught a break. I caught a break with Philly because my agent represented Mo Cheeks at the time, who was the head coach.
Okay.
And so they really did me a favor. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They drafted Absolutely. Me. They drafted me as a favor for the relationship that Mo and my agent had. And, you know, obviously I was talented, you know, so it was a low risk, high reward for them. They took a chance on me. And, you know, I spent the first 8 years of my career in Philly. So.
Which was incredible. I think that's a very interesting thing you just said, is they drafted me as a favor, because I think guys don't realize, like, so at that point, they got the 45th pick. They're not really valuing that pick at that point in the draft. Right. And guys don't realize how many favors are done in this league.
Relationships, bro.
Absolutely. And I have one of my young fellas, I think he came out a couple years ago, didn't get drafted. And I had a conversation with him a couple months ago, or not even a couple months ago, maybe like a month ago. And I was telling him, don't get caught up in the whole, I'm better than that dude, I'm better than this dude, I'm better than that dude. Because it ain't about that. You know, when you get to the 14th and 15th man on the roster, which is what you was drafted as, which is what I was drafted as, that position is decided by a coach.
For
and
sure.
In your case, would it be like, all right, so here's our 14th or 15th spot. Mo Cheeks is our coach. Let's do this favor for our coach, because that's who decides that spot. And I was telling the young fella, like, yo, man, you got to get tight with one of these coaches so that when they get your way into the league is going to be a 14th or 15th man. And when they get down to that 14th or 15th man, that coach has got to be like, that's my guy. And then there's your opportunity. Stop falling into this trap of, man, you see that guy and this guy and that guy and that guy, I'm better than all of them, because it's less about that.
It's not about that at all. It's really about what a team need and how a team feel about you. And, you know, if somebody draft you, it makes them look good for your success.
Yes.
So they're going to push you. But if a team not really married to you being a draft pick, they're going to move to the guys that they really care about, you know. And I was blessed to be 17 when I got drafted. They realized I was talented. They realized they had time to groom me. You know, this wasn't going to be an overnight thing. You know, they still had Allen Iverson playing 45 minutes a game at that spot. And then Kevin Ollie is backing him up and Willie Green is backing him up. So there was no pressure on drafting me at that position. You know what I'm saying? So I was blessed to have that opportunity to watch them, to see what I can and what I can't do, and have 2 years where I can really pretty much groom myself. And just, I called it an internship, a paid internship. That's how I looked at it. You know, for my first 2 years, I knew I wasn't going to get on the floor, but it was a paid internship. And then that third year, I was looking around like, all right, y'all got me fucked up. I'm ready. You know what I'm saying? But I appreciate it. I appreciated the journey. I'm glad that nothing was given to me, because I can look back going into year 18, if I continue to play, to say, man, I really did this shit and I did something that I can be proud of. You know what I'm saying? And it wasn't a lot of favors involved except the fact that the first one that got me in the door. And that was important. You know what I'm saying?
No, for sure. So you spend your rookie year, and you spend majority of that, or the good chunk of the beginning of the season at least, in the D League at the time. Wasn't the G League?
No,
it was,
you know,
the
I only played. You know what's crazy? That's the most misunderstood thing about me. I only played 3 games in the G League, bro.
Really?
I only played 3 games in my entire career, but they put me on like that. Hey, alumni shit.
Yeah, they do. That's interesting.
No, Billy King, our GM at the time, he felt like it was more important for me as a young kid. Like I said, I was 17 by the time I was drafted. I was 18 by the time training camp started. He thought it was more important for me to understand I'm working with grown men. I need to be around this environment. I need to be there. I need to feel it. I need to feel that energy. And that's how we carried it. And then my second year, I got to the point I'm like, yo, I got to play. And so they figured out a way where I went and played it was supposed to be 3 home games. At that time, it was the Fort Worth Flyers. We was down in Fort Worth. And they had a game on a Monday, a game on Wednesday, a game on Friday, all in Fort Worth. We would have to travel to Little Rock, Arkansas that Saturday, play a game, and then I would fly back.
Okay. So
I played the 3 games, averaged 39 points a game for that week. I got on a team bus. We drove 9 hours on a bus to Little Rock, Arkansas. I get to my room in Little Rock, Arkansas. Within an hour, I got a phone call in my room, said, we need you to go to the airport right now. We need you to go to Philly right now. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I turn on ESPN and they traded AI.
Wow.
So
that's crazy.
The week I went to it was D League at the time, but the week I went to the G League, my last game I was supposed to play, they called me right back to Philly because they traded AI. And I got to Philly at halftime. They was playing the Washington Wizards that Saturday night. I got to the gym at halftime and never looked back.
That's insane. By the way, that's a very monumental NBA moment. Like to be involved in that moment.
I can't forget it. I can never forget it. Yeah. And the fact that it was like, everybody know how I feel about AI. He's my idol. You know, I got tattoos because of this dude. My whole thing is based around you know, the image that he created. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I say that publicly, like I worship the ground this dude walked on. So for me to have an opportunity to work with him, and then our paths constantly cross, and you know, it was cause and effect, and it was crazy. But to have him in my corner and to be a part of his history, and for him to be a part of my history, part of each other's stories, is I don't know, bro.
No, that's insane. So tell me this though. Did that fuck with you mentally? That, like, you find out, you know, AI just been traded. Like, did that fuck with you?
It fucked with me, but it was more like everything was 100 miles an hour at that time for me. Like, you got to understand, I'm so young and I'm in the NBA. So every single day is an experience for me. Every day. Whatever arena we going to, I'm in the arena looking around with the big eyes. Whatever team we playing, I'm looking at the superstars with the big eyes. You know, like every little experience is something to me. So I was holding on to all of that shit. So once I got my opportunity, I was so locked in on not fucking my chance up. I couldn't really even think about the big homie. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I was like, okay, this is it. You know what I'm saying? Moment. Yeah, this is my opportunity.
That's interesting. I my rookie year, I had Mark Jackson was our head coach. And the day before our first regular season game, he pulled me to the side and he's like, yo, you know, the NBA has a weird way of working itself out. And, you know, you may not get an opportunity right away, but everyone gets an opportunity, and just make sure when your number's called, you're ready for your opportunity. So I'm like, all right, cool. Like, in a weird way, I think he telling me, like, tomorrow you're not going to play. So I'm like, let me mentally prepare myself for that. And so I don't play first game. second game we play.
Were you dressing though?
I'm dressing. Okay. I am dressing. So, and for those of y'all that don't know, what he's asking about dressing is, in the NBA, you got 15 roster spots. Only 13 guys can dress. Other two guys are inactive. So I was dressing.
It's 13 now. Then it was 12.
Facts. Facts. Absolutely. And so I was dressing. Second game of my career. And at that time, I came in the league. They had me playing a three, which is a disaster, and almost had me out of here. But the second game, Brandon Rush tore his ACL. And so I'm sitting there on the bench, and I'm like, yo, this is what he was talking about. Like, everybody get an opportunity. In that game, mm-hmm. I still only played 3 minutes. But that's three more minutes than I played the first game. And, like, I try to tell all the young guys now, and to know that that was your mindset at 19. Like, I wasn't ready for that. I was 22 years old. And you was 17. Well, second year. So 18 turning 19.
Right.
I wasn't ready for that. I was messed up because, you know, in my life, I had never not played before. Yours mm-hmm. even more so than me, because you going from high school. But I had never not played before. So mentally, I just wasn't ready to not play.
Right.
And I'm like, yo, this is a different thing for me. But then I saw Brandon Rush get hurt. And I'm like, okay, I see what he mean now. And then my chance came, and it'll go, and it'll come, and it'll go, and it'll come. But every time it did come, I was ready for it. And I think that's what the young guys don't understand these days. I think young guys these days, sometimes they end up so entitled. And they don't understand, like, yo, number one, you don't understand the NBA game coming into the NBA. So although you may be more talented, although you may have more potential and all of those things, athletic and shoot better than this guy in front of you, that guy understands the NBA game. And I think we've done a poor job as guys growing older in this league and relaying that to these guys. It's like,
well, should they eliminate us?
Understand the NBA game.
They eliminate us. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of these teams with these young guys, they don't have no vets or OGs in the locker room to give them game. You know what I'm saying? That's why my run with the Hawks this past year and a half was a gift and a curse. You know, it wasn't the greatest fit for me to be on the floor and to continue my career, but I had the best time with learning these guys and giving them information and being a big brother figure to them and giving them some game. And they were soaking it up, and I thought they was applying it. And it just made me feel like, damn, this shit is important. It's important because sometimes the young guys, we might criticize them and they really don't know. They really don't have the information, but we criticize them like, you need to be doing this, you need to be doing that. The niggas like, bro, I don't even know what you're talking about.
That part.
You know what I'm saying?
And so, absolutely.
So I think it's important for the OGs and for the vets, you know, older guys, to be that middle ground, to be that gray area, to kind of bridge that gap for guys to have the information and then for them to apply it as well.
No, for sure. I agree with that 100%. I was actually explaining to someone the other day how vets are getting, like, if you're a vet, you it's very, very likely that they'll squeeze you in this league now. And how the salaries work. See, I don't think people truly understand, like, how the salary structure work now.
Right.
It's turned more into baseball than it used to be. You know, you essentially cut the entire middle out, where the NBA used to have minimums, used to have mid-levels, used to have maxes, and mm-hmm. everything in between that. Now you got max, you got mid-level, taxpayer mid-level, if it's a tax team, and minimums.
Right.
And because of that, and because of how high the salaries are for the top three players on the team,
can't really squeeze none out of there.
Exactly. So every team is now ending up right at the tax or above the tax. And so, for instance, in our situation, I was actually explaining some contract situations to someone yesterday, and I was just telling him, like, because he was like, why'd y'all let Gary Payton go? Right? Like, he was so big to what y'all did. And I said, I agree 100%. I didn't want to see GP go. But with the way these taxes are set up now, I think, and I could be, I'll be a little off on the numbers, but, like, so GP signed a $9 million a year. In order for us to pay that $9 million per year in our tax situation, I think it's like $45 million a year or something like that.
Yeah, you got to let them roll.
And so it's, you know, it's one of those things of like, you're looking at it like, oh man, that's $9 million. But they're looking at it like, that's a $45 million player.
It's a tech seat, yeah.
And are they willing, and are they willing to go that high? And I think that's something that has to be figured out in this next CBA.
Well, they told like us you the said, last CBA, don't sign that shit.
They did. And we signed it every time.
They told us.
We signed it every time.
They told us in plain English, listen, the middle is getting wiped out if y'all sign this deal. And we was like, hey, well, all right. And we did it. Mm-hmm.
So. And we did it in the middle getting wiped out. And like you said, where it's taking it, where it's impacting, is it's definitely impacting the rookies. Like you look at some of these teams, they don't have a vet. Like I think one of Memphis's issues last year was they didn't have a vet. And so once it gets tough, you get into that playoff series where it gets tough. Who is that one guy that you turn to for experience that's calming everything down?
Right.
That's because for me. Yeah, because for me, that was huge in my career. You think of like, I mean, you think of the vets I had, bro. I had Jermaine O'Neal, Jared Jack, David Lee, Andre Iguodala, David West, Leandro Barbosa, like Carl Landry. Those are the guys that were my vets.
Right.
Andrew Bogut. That was everything for my career. You speaking, you had Andre Iguodala.
You had real guys you could look AI. Up to, and you respected their words. I had AI. I had both AIs, but Dre was more my peer. We was figuring this shit out at the same time, but he still was a big brother to me, though.
Yeah.
Man, Elton Brand, Chris Webber, fucking Kevin Ollie. I owe so many flowers to Kevin Ollie, you know, early in my career, just as a kid. Like, he knew I was a kid, and he was just right for me. Hey, young fella, after practice, man, I ain't going to hold you up. I know you're trying to get out there, man. Just shoot with me 10, 15 minutes. Like, he knew how to communicate with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he would speak to me like if I didn't do it, I was letting him down. He knew how to, you know what I'm saying? And so, but that was so big for me because that taught me how to communicate with the next group of young guys when I was in a position. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
I think that's why I have so many special bonds with these young guys, because Kevin Ollie taught me how to communicate.
Nah, for sure. So in continuing with your career, you do your first 8 years with the Sixers, then you leave and you sign with the Hawks. Going back to the crib, how was that experience going back for you after 8 years, as opposed to if you had gone there right out of high school?
I'm glad it played out how it did. I don't think I was mature enough. I don't think I would have been locked in. I don't think I would have been focused, you know, just because when you're so young and you know how it is, those first, you know, your first 4 or 5 years, everybody wants to be a part of it.
Absolutely.
Everybody wants to be a part of it. Everybody want to experience it. And so for me to be so young and being at home, and I got a big family. I got a big crew. I got a lot of people that depend on me. And if I'd have had that pressure on me at a young age, I would have been done, bro.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been done. So I'm glad it played out how it did, because I had never been to Philadelphia before I got drafted there. And, you know, by the time I left, I had two kids. I was a grown man. You know, I had tough skin because of the city that I played in. Like, I played in one of the roughest cities when it come to fans, when it come to media. And I was able to, you know, and when you leave Philadelphia and they love you, it's like, job well done, because everybody don't get out like that in Philly.
In fact,
you know, everybody don't get out where they say, yeah, we appreciate you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm just grateful that my route went the way that it did. And I wouldn't have been ready for Atlanta right off the bat. But shit, by the time I got there in year number 9, it was just my two stints with Atlanta. We just throw both of them away, man. Nah,
but mentally though, you your first year there, you tore your ACL.
Second year I tore my ACL.
Second year.
Yep. Second
okay.
year.
Did it help you being at home and having that support of the people at home? Or do you think no matter where you was at, it would have been the same?
I think it would have been the same, because I didn't spend no time in Atlanta. When I tore my ACL, they sent me straight to Florida. I was down in Florida with to Andrews. Yep, I rented a crib down there, and I was there full time. So it really didn't matter.
And after that, you then get traded to the Toronto Raptors. Mm-hmm. Where, in my opinion, is where your career took off. Like, you became Lou Will in Philly, obviously. But I feel like when you got to Toronto, that's when you became, like, who you are today, dude.
I was playing with house money. That? Of course. I was playing with house money. You know, I had success. Then I hit a bump in the road with the ACL tear. And shout out to Coach Bud. Buttonholzer pulled me in the office. He said, yo, I don't think you'll ever be the same player again. You know, he told me to my face. And I respect him to this day because, you know, he didn't play me. He didn't waste my time. He set me down right at the end of the season, said, I don't think it's going to work here. We're going to find a trade partner for you. In the summer, we'll be in touch. Told me straight up. Yeah, told me straight up. And I had a lot going on in my life at that time. Like I said, I was at a crossroads in my career. You know, when you tear your ACL, you like it's a lot of dark days with the ACL, bro. You was around Clay. I'm sure he could tell you.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a lot of dark days. You like a lot of self-doubt. You know what I'm saying? And so once I got to Toronto, shit, I thought my career was over anyway. So I told him, I'm like, yo, I'm here for the year. I'm just going to hoop, have some fun. I'm going to try to help y'all as much as I can, and I'm done. So, like, let's do it. And, you know, shout out to Kyle. Shout out to DeMar. Shout out to Chuck Hayes. Shout out to Amir Johnson. Them four dudes, they rallied around me so much, bro. They had so much experience, so much knowledge about Toronto. And them four dudes just poured into me. Poured into me. Like, DeMar to this day, D-Boy will tell you to this day, that's my sixth man. But he always would say that to me before I even won the six man award up there. He was like, hey, bro, hey, you my six man, like turn up. And so they gave me that confidence, like you part of us now, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that was something that reset my career. I was able to win my first six man of the year, then go to LA right after that. And it re-energized me. I fell in love with the game again. I fell in love with being in the gym again. My body started feeling right. And I just, after that, man, I just start taking off again.
Facts. I think you know, then so you go there, you reestablish your career, you get traded to the Clippers. How influential was Doc to you then going on to win those next two? Because I felt like, and this, you know, I felt like in 2016. Steph and I were the deadliest combination in the NBA. And it was based on Steph coming off a pick and roll. And if you step up, if you low, he hitting the shot, as we all know. If I roll and I get into that pocket at that time, it was lights out for everybody.
He talking about at that time, like you ain't just win the chip again.
Well, but we had to do it a little differently now. They guard us differently now. But at that time, if I got in the pocket.
At this point, y'all have mastered it, though. Like,
yeah, it's clockwork
the one thing that, yeah, the one thing I appreciate about y'all, when I watch y'all play, I watch y'all go option A, option B, option C, mm-hmm. option D. All right, fuck it. Let's figure it out. Like, absolutely. It's protocol with y'all, man. I respect that about y'all. It's protocol.
I appreciate that. But on the flip side of that, I thought you and Montrezl Harrell became like one of the most deadly combinations in the NBA. And I thought for y'all to build that chemistry, for Doc to find those two pieces, I thought that was huge. How do you feel about Doc and what he brought to your career once you then went to
let me tell you that time in my career. So the first time I thought I was going to retire was going into Toronto. The second time I was going to retire is when I got traded to the Clippers, because a lot of people don't realize that was the third team in 6 months for me.
Wow. It was Houston too, right?
Yeah, see, I was with the Lakers. But the Lakers told me they was going to trade me. They was like, we wasted your time. We're going to get you out of here. So they traded me to Houston over the All-Star break. I finished the season with Houston, and Houston traded me in the offseason. So I'm looking like, I'm not holding value anywhere. You know what I'm saying? No,
absolutely.
No, these teams not looking at me as a valuable piece. So it might be, I think this is year 13, 14, like going into my 14th year. Yeah. So I'm like, you know, this good run. You know what I'm saying? Like, tilt your hat off. You had a good run.
That part.
And if you ever look back at the press conference, I'm there I'm frowning. I don't want to be there. I'm holding the jersey. And literally, it's a video out there. As soon as they're done taking pictures, I'll put the jersey down, walk off the stage, and leave. So Doc called me. He like, yo, you left yet? I said, I'm on my way to the airport. He like, turn around. I need to talk to you. So I turn around, go back to the gym. He like, what's up with you? I'm like, what you mean? He like, your energy, like I ain't really feeling it. If you know Doc, he don't hold no punches. He like, He like, yo, I ain't feeling it. Like, you don't want to be here? I said, I don't. I said, bro, I done got traded twice in 6 months. It's like, no, y'all wasn't on my radar. I wasn't a big Clippers fan. Like, I don't know. They having all this turmoil in the media with Doc and DJ and Blake and all of that, with Chris. Like, bro, I don't want to be a part of this. You know what I'm saying? So he like, look, we resetting, we re-energizing. I don't know what else I need to tell you, but this is going to be your home, and I'm going to allow you to be yourself, and we're going to do something special here. And that was, Doc told me that day one. And for whatever reason, I believed him. For whatever reason, I bought in, and my Clippers run is by far the best I felt playing basketball in my entire career.
For sure. I think it was a special run, especially with us being in Golden State, same division and all that. We played y'all a lot.
For sure.
And there were times during that run where you were number one on the scouting report.
No, it was
and
a good
to
run.
To go from number one, it was unprecedented, because it's like you're 14, 15, 16. It's like you were getting better.
Yeah, it was Benjamin Button. He was calling me Benjamin Button.
and it was a very weird thing, because you kept getting in that space of like, all right, they got Lou Will, but he got to be slowing down now. Like, they got Lou Will, he got to be slowing down now. And it's like you kept getting better. And it got to a point to where I know when you had 50 on us, you were the guy on the team. And that then led you to a different stratosphere of NBA players. And I always say, people can think what they want, media can think what they want, but how your counterparts feel about you, how the guys that's in the league feel about you, that's the shit that really matters. And it got to the point to where then it's like guys looking at you like, oh, that's Lou Team. Like, you leading the charge of that offense. What was that like for you, going from 14 years of just being one of the guys to like now, like, this is actually my team?
Yeah, like I said, it was one of the greatest runs of my career, because we had the idea that we knew everybody's position, we knew everybody's job. So I wasn't shy about saying I got it, because my teammates were comfortable with me saying it, and they was giving me the tools to go do it. Like Pat Bev, you know, our bond began in that Clippers, because, you know, he saw how I was carrying myself. You know, once we traded Blake, everybody was down. We weren't sure how it was going to go. And I said, everybody down. I said, look, man, they traded Blake. We love Blake. So we don't have to feel responsible for that. Only thing we can do is play as hard as we can, give ourselves an opportunity to win, and live with the results. And whatever happened, it happened. Don't put the pressure on us to have to fix that. And that was the mindset that we took. And we went out and we just played fun. We played free. We played happy every night. And we put this, we created our own chip on our shoulder, like everybody was against us. Well, nobody was. we weren't on nobody's radar. But we tricked ourselves into thinking like, oh, y'all don't think we could still compete. And that's why our mentality was so strong. I think that's why those years were so strong. While we gave a lot of people problems, I wish we'd have kept that team together and tried to get some things done, but you know how the business go. Absolutely. But like I said, that's just a special time in my career, bro.
No, I think super dope, man. Like I said, going up against you guys and playing against y'all is a very special thing. And leading the charge were three guys that got it out the mud, which was you, Pat Bev, and Trez. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, like, just watching that, like, I think that inspired more people than y'all knew.
For sure.
Because it just showed people that, like, nah, you don't need this or that to get this done. Like, you, there's still other ways to get it done.
Yeah.
And so I thought that inspired a lot of people. Continuing on along with your career, you, Jamal Crawford, Manu Ginobili are viewed as like the guys coming off the bench, the sixth man. Like, y'all are viewed as, in my opinion, probably the best three guys. Now, the one guy that I would put in that conversation, and no one does because he wasn't scoring a lot, was Andre Iguodala when he was with us. Or, I mean, he's with us now, but when he first moved to sixth man.
Right.
And the impact that he had on our team, I'm like, oh, he should be in that conversation as well. Mm-hmm. You know, but obviously you guys have the Sixth Man of the Year awards to back that up. But how would you compare your game to Jamal Crawford and Manu Ginobili game and their path as well?
I think we all three had three different unique paths, and all three of us got it done. You know, I think you can find a lot of spots in Manu's career where you can say he's the greatest sixth man. You can find a lot of spots in Jamal's career where you can say that, and you can say it about mine. I think all three of us had such different routes and so different unique games. Like, I can't do half the shit that Jamal do with the basketball.
Man.
You know what I mean?
Crazy.
I can't do half of it. I couldn't even try. I don't know if I could have accomplished the things that Manu accomplished in that system the way that he did, you know, and I don't think those guys could have put teams on their back the way that I did, you know. So all of our paths were completely different, but you got to respect all three. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, facts for sure. And they just start renaming all of these awards. If they
I gotta
with
have
the
it.
Sixth Man Award, who'd I go to?
I gotta have it.
I
don't shy away from that, because out of the guys that we compare, you know, when we start having a six man conversation, I think I'm the only one that embraced it, that said, mm-hmm. This is a lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? I think Jamal always strived to be like a mega star. You know, and he was. Don't get me confused. You know how this shit go, but
yeah,
he always was looking for that. And I was like, if this is my job, I'm gonna make it embarrassing for me to come off the bench. Mm-hmm. And so that's the only reason I say I give it to myself, because I just embraced the lifestyle of it. I made it okay for kids to want to even accept that position. And I made this shit look cool. You know what I'm saying? And so I give it to myself.
I actually agree with that. because and it kind of goes back to what we were just speaking about, was if no one ever thought you was a starter before, you got to a point to where the team was yours and you still kept coming off the bench.
It's like, what are we doing? You know what I'm saying? It was like, what are we doing? And it got to a point where Doc was like, you're still coming off the bench. He like, I'm not going to throw you off of your rhythm. Like, I know what I get out of that. So mm-hmm. I'm not even going to play around with it, because I know exactly what I'm going to get out of you when you come into the game at the 5-minute mark. I know it's on. So we're going to leave that in place. You know what I'm saying? I think, you know, with the other guys, like, they were just a great unit with Manu. They were a great unit. Like, shit, you look at games, he was coming in the game at the 10-minute mark.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't no sixth man for real. You know, Jamal was always striving to be a superstar, be an all-star, be a highlighted player in this league. He was always striving for that. And I think I was just the one guy that was, not saying that I was complacent and I was cool with my position. I just embraced it. And I gave it a name, gave it a likeness, gave it a vibe, gave it a feel. You know what I'm saying?
No, so for sure. I think, for those of y'all that don't know, if you pull up to Signature, the private airport at LAX,
for
this
sure.
man still has his own parking spot.
That's dope.
Sixth man of the year.
But
Lou Will.
But before it said Lou Will, just to keep it all the way 1,000, it said Jamal Crawford.
It said, see, I didn't see that.
Yeah,
I didn't see that.
Yeah, so it said Jamal Crawford. And once I won that first Clifford one, we came to the airport and it was changed. So it was him first.
Okay.
It was Big Dog's spot first.
I respect that. And by the way, much love and respect to Jamal Crawford. one of the OGs, guys who did it the right way, probably can still play, hooping.
I just seen he had 40 this weekend in the pro-am.
Yeah, he different. Benjamin Button for real.
For sure.
He different. But I think the fact that it still to this day says that carries some weight. Like, this is Los Angeles. It's not Oklahoma City. This is Los Angeles, man. Everybody go to that airport.
Yeah, I know that. Like, I know LeBron was looking like, what the fuck is going on around here?
Facts. Hey, but I'm going to ask a couple more questions. I want to get you out of here. I don't want to take up too much of your time. These couple questions is a little all over the place, but it's something that I want to ask for my own personal self. Number one, the chicken wing story. Mm-hmm. The bubble going on, you leave. And when you said it, I knew, because when I go there, if I don't go to the strip club, I'm going to get me some chicken wings. Yeah. And so when you said it, I knew what it was. But how was that for you navigating that? Because, I mean, motherfuckers was on your neck when that happened.
It was difficult for me because I felt like it was getting to a point where, you know, all of the shit that I accomplished, how I've carried myself over my career, like, they was just trying to attach some goofy shit to my name. And so I was fighting the narrative. I was fighting the narrative because they was trying to make me out to be a goofy. Like, I was out here tripping, and I was like, come on, man, that never been my MO. So let's not start that. Like, I'm getting to the end of my career. I'm in year 15, and y'all talking like I've been tripping this whole time. You know what I'm saying? I think I said it on another platform. Like, nobody was fucking, none of us was pandemic experts at the time.
Facts.
Like, none of us. You know what I'm saying?
Nobody. Not even the experts.
Yeah, nobody. And so everything that I did that day, I thought I did it responsibly. You know what I'm saying? And the shit just took a life of its own. You know, it's actually birthed businesses. It's birthed nicknames. I get more lemon pepper shit than underground and all of that. It's like, lemon pepper is here to stay. You know what I'm saying?
It is.
That shit, it's here to stay. And I fought it for a minute because of, like I said, the way people were trying to perceive me, like, oh, I snuck out the bubble to go to Magic City. I'm like, come on, man.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
That's what they did.
That was my only thing, just trying to navigate the narrative behind, you know, my decision. Was it a great decision? Looking back in hindsight, probably not. But at that time, I didn't think I was tripping. I didn't think I was doing nothing wrong, you know, but I could see it both ways.
No, definitely. I think that takes an incredible person, an incredible man to say, like, yeah, it probably wasn't the best decision for me to make, but in that moment, that's what I was doing, and stand on that. I respect that.
Yeah,
I definitely respect that.
And I took my 10 days in quarantine like a man.
You ain't trying to battle it? Like, all right, I'm going to take my 10.
I ain't fighting. Hey, listen, Adam called me straight up. He says, we're going to give you 10 days quarantine because this shit don't look good. I said, yes, sir. Got off the phone.
No problem.
You got it.
I respect Adam. I like Adam. Adam does it the right way. He does it the right way.
And he direct, he's straight up with his shit. Yeah, so I respect
it. You respect it.
Yeah.
I just had a situation with them about stuff I said on the podcast, and I spoke with him, and he's like, and I explained to him what I meant and all of that, and we had a long conversation. We talked about a lot of stuff. But I respected how he handled it. He's like, all right, well, if that's how you feel about this and that's what you're saying, then I'm going to allow you to go handle that. Like, I don't need to put out this statement from the league or from me or this. If you're saying that you're going to go handle this situation, then I'm just going to let you go handle it. And I can respect that because, you know, we always speak about being viewed as partners. Like, we're partners in this league. We're not just an employee. Like, we make this league go. And I feel like Adam views us as partners.
Right. And you need that.
I can appreciate that.
And you need that because if you don't know no better, you can feel like you just an employee. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You don't realize your bargaining value. You don't realize your negotiating value until somebody tell you or until your partner tell you, yo, we in this shit together. You know what I'm saying?
Facts. Speaking of negotiating value, a couple years ago, you had spoke out about the contracts that you had and the production that you've had over the course of your career. Do you think there was something that could have been done differently for you to get the value that I think you deserved this whole time that you've been in this league?
I think on my end, I probably could have been more patient. You know, like looking back at probably my last deal that I got, I probably could have been more patient and I probably could have got the money. But the mindset that I'm in at that time, again, I don't have stability at that time in my career. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying?
And so, absolutely.
So when I don't have that stability, be like, I'm about to get fucking paid. Mm-hmm. Like I'm shaking in my boots because I don't know which way is up. I'm dealing with so much, you know, so much, I want to say turmoil because I'm blessed to be in my 15th year and still had this issue. But it was just, I didn't have that stability where I could wait it out. Mm-hmm. I knew where I wanted to be. I knew where I wanted to continue to hoop. Clippers threw me a number. I took it. Mm-hmm. You know, it was some more money out there. I thought I'd have been miserable if I went and got it. You know,
yeah, so, and I think that's a big deal.
You know what I'm saying? Like, them extra $3-4 million ain't worth me fucking ready to pull my hair out every day for 7 months.
That part.
You know, for me, you know, I live a very cool middle-class lifestyle. If you ever come around Atlanta, you will see, like, I'm going to be okay. You know what I'm saying? I don't overextend myself, but that's what I could have did on my last deal. I probably could have been more patient. If I'd have waited it out, I think I would have got one of those deals that I wanted. Before that, it just didn't work my way. I just, you know, just be real. Game, you know, the business side didn't go my way.
No, and I think it's important for people to understand the business side. It's not always your production. It's the team you own. What are they willing to pay? Because if that team goes away, you lose your negotiating power. And all of these things that go into play, it's not just the final number. Like, oh, man, he's that good. He gets this number. It's totally different than that. I think a lot of people don't understand that.
Yeah, you know, and that's, you know, when a lot of people, man, Lou should have got this, Lou should have got that. I agree with y'all 100%. But y'all just got to understand where I was at. You know, I'm looking for stability. I'm looking for somebody to tell me I've been traded 3 times. I've been on 3 teams in 6 months. I need somebody to tell me I got 3-4 years where I can chill out and I can be myself and know that this is going to be home. That's what I was looking for. So the first time I heard that and it was where I wanted to be, I'm in. You know what I'm saying?
I respect that. I respect that. And I'll tell you another thing I respect is you saying I could have been more patient. You know, in most situations like that, people blame the agent right away. They say, oh, man, it's the agent's fault because the outside people say it's the agent's fault, right? Like, oh, he should have got this amount of money. And then the outside people, you and the agent could have had a million conversations. The outside people start blaming the agent. The whole world blame the agent. You know, and I don't know what your situation was with your agent. I'm not saying it was or wasn't their fault. But the fact that you could sit here and say, I could have been more patient, I respect that because it get thrown on the agent so much.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. We had a lot of conversations and I had a lot of opportunities, a lot of options on the table. And I was steadfast in what I wanted. I knew what I wanted. I knew where I wanted to be. And like I said, man, I live in Grayson, Georgia. I live in the country, dog. I don't need much. You know what I'm saying? And I'm one of those people. You know when guys say, I'll play basketball for free and they full of shit? Like, I think I would be one of those people for real. I really love hooping. You know what I'm saying? And so I didn't think as a businessman as much as I did as a hooper. I should have been thinking as a businessman. I was thinking more as a hooper. You know, if I got enough to keep me going, I'm good. Like, let's lace up. When sometimes I should have stopped and looked at things more as a businessman. And shout out to you, because I see you very vocal about it. And you give a lot of these young guys the information. But I think that's a great thing where the game is now. Everybody is starting to figure out that they're their own individual businesses and they're running shit like individual businesses and not just hoopers. You know what I'm saying? So kudos to you for continuing that conversation.
No, I appreciate it, bro. A couple more questions and I'll let you go. And we were just talking about Adam Silver. He recently spoke about how he wants to see the age rule change back from 19 to 18. As someone who, as someone, if I'm not mistaken, you might have been the last draft that was allowed to go out of high school, right?
Yeah, school.
As someone who went out of high school, do you see a benefit in it being 19, or do you think it should go back to being 18?
Talent is talent, bro. Like, Luka been a pro since he was 14, 15. Like, the guys that have been pillars of this game, Kevin Garnett, Kobe, LeBron, these are all high school guys. These are all guys coming in at 18. They put this shit on their backs, and they've turned this shit into a Fortune 500 company. Mm-hmm. So what difference does 18 and 19 make besides you wasting a year of time? Because if you send me to college, I'm only going because I have to.
Yeah, that's a fact.
I'm only going because I have to, because that's the route that y'all have given me. You know, so, you know, we have prep schools and we got the G League now and all of these things, but nothing gets you ready for the real thing, like the real thing, bro. So I don't think that changes anything. Let these guys come in when they talented enough to compete for themselves and do their thing.
I respect that. You heard it from the man himself who's done it, been through it. Last question before we get out of here, bro. What's next for you? You want to keep playing? And if you do want to keep playing, what does it take for a team to say, all right, or for you to say, yep, I'm going to go to this situation? Because like you said, the last year with the Hawks, it was cool from a vet standpoint from you watching Trey grow and like all them younger guys grow. But as a competitor like yourself, the guy who I was playing against, I know you're not cool with that. You know what I'm saying? So like, what does it got to be for you?
It got to make sense for me. You know, like we touched on about family early on. My kids are 11. My 8-year-old, she's in acting. I picked her up from acting. She in an acting summer camp. My son, 2 years old. I'm trying to mold him into being a man. Like I got a lot of shit going on around the house that can use my time and my energy. So if it don't make sense, I'm not interested in it. But I definitely would still like to play. I still enjoy it. I still have that desire to play. I still have that desire to be on the road with the guys and try to create memories, you know? So if the phone ring, it ring. We'll see.
But if not, you at peace.
I ain't tripping.
I respect that.
I ain't tripping at all.
I respect that, bro. Like I said, man, I want to thank you for coming on to the show. I know we have been trying to do this for a while, but as a guy who I respect in this league, and I think we've always had that respect since I came into the league.
For sure.
As a guy who I respect, just the way you've gone about your business, the way you carry yourself, you know, and most importantly, your career and how you've gone about that. Much love, bro. I appreciate you. You always welcome back on the Draymond Green Show. I appreciate you stopping by, homie.
Love, my G, always.
Man, that was an incredible interview. I have a deep appreciation for Lou Will, man. He's just one of them guys who, and he kind of said it on the pod, like, he just knows his lane, he's found his lane, and he just stayed there. Like, and that's in life and basketball. I'm not just talking basketball. I'm talking about the way he carry himself, the way he just go about being Lou Will. I got a lot of respect for that. You see so many people drift this way and that way. Guy doesn't drift at all. He stayed right there. And he's had an absolutely incredible NBA career. I hope to see it continue to go on. Never really hate to see guys lead a game. But in saying that, like he said, he at peace with, if this is it, this is it. If the right situation happens, then, you know, he move on to that situation. But like I said, as a fan of Lou Will and somebody who appreciates his game and what he brings to the floor, I definitely hope he go at least one more. But if not, it's been an incredible run for him on and off the court. I think he's done it like not many guys have. And I got a lot of love and respect for that. So thanks to our guest, Lou Will. I hope you all enjoyed the interview as much as I enjoyed conducting the interview and listening as well. Until next week, that's a wrap from the Draymond Green Show. Peace.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Fire the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Searwood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. Go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full grate sear zone so you can put more food on the flame. Food will look as good as it tastes. This grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You can also add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.